It's an absolutely brilliant way to get your run in and exercise your dog at the same time. So obviously, if you were running with a Yorkie, it's not going to make you faster. My German pointer, who's now, he's 12 years old and he's absolutely retired. He just likes a walk now. But in his heyday, I'd say he took my 5K would be just over 20 minutes, and he brought me to just over 16 minutes for a 5K.
Hello and welcome to the Running Tales podcast. I'm Craig Lewis and I'm currently searching for the perfect dog to get me under the elusive 21-minute mark for parkrun. The voice you heard there was Ali Hall, who was the co-founder of Canny Sports Edinburgh. Ali's wide-ranging life in the world of running started when she was at boarding school and has taken in everything from ultra running and canicross to putting on running tours and taking on adventure races. We spoke about everything from the benefits of sports psychology and how running can boost people's mental health to life as a coach working for Pylon, an ultra running venture which aims to lift the performances of top athletes and gives others something to aspire to. I started our conversation by asking Ali how she first started running.
I stumbled across running when I was probably about 13 or 14. And at the time, I was at a boarding school, which I think anyone who's ever been to boarding school will understand it can have its difficulties. And a lot of people can be very judgmental about it as well, and might listen to this and think, oh, what a snooty cow, or it's not like I chose to go there, and I have my own difficulties from being there. But running gave me the space to find solitude, I suppose, and get away from all sorts of from bullying to it was quite a lonely environment, even though I was surrounded by people. Whereas running gave me a solitude. And I was fortunate enough to be able to help out with a couple of horses. So I ran to help out with the horses. And I just found running on the trails in that stage of my life was really cathartic.
So it was completely about getting away, having a bit of your own mind space and mindfulness and discovering yourself, I suppose.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, I mean, I'm 41 now, so that was 13, 14 at the time. So this was long before mental health and the effect of exercise on our well-being was really so prevalent and spoken about. And especially at that young age, that wouldn't have been in on my radar. And I think I thought I was like the only one in the world who ran and experienced the kind of joy and, the being present. I thought I'd discovered heroin, probably.
Well, it's a pretty healthy kind of heroin, to be fair.
Yeah.
Were there other girls at the school who were running as well, or was it something you just hit it off and did yourself, and did that develop into something competitive, or was it purely, I'm just going to go out because I love this and it's an escape?
Yeah, there would have been others doing it, but not together. We're not as a group, if that makes sense. Probably everyone on their own little journeys. And for me, it then took me to competing in cross country. I think I ran Scottish Schools cross country, and I was awarded some, I think it was full colours or some achievement at school for my running. But it was also quite bizarre and quite complex because I think my school didn't necessarily recognise running achievements. It was very much hockey and rugby. And the PE teachers were quite, how can I say, almost invisibling of it. And I like one worked in my boarding house, and the day I was awarded colours for running, she couldn't congratulate me when one of the younger girls kind of highlighted to her that I'd won this achievement, and she was a PE teacher. She just kind of said, oh, I know she did. And then there was no congratulations, well done, or there was no encouragement for other people to keep fit, or but I didn't fit the mold because I wasn't a hockey girl. So my running was kind of deemed as irrelevant. It wasn't really seen as worthy. So it was a kind of, although it gave me so much joy, I kind of was given the message from the adults around me that it was not important, and it was kind of irrelevant.
Was it hard to, did that make it harder to push through with running, or did you just love it so much that you did it to spite them almost?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I've never thought of that. I think because I was doing it for me, it didn't really matter what about getting the external validation. It maybe made me feel a little bit less than, or that what I was doing wasn't recognized. I wasn't doing it for the recognition. So I don't think it made it harder. I just carried on doing what I loved doing. I guess I just didn't have, I don't feel I had the support to do it though.
But running did stay with you, and it stayed with you through to your life at university and what you did there, and indeed what you studied there.
Yeah, so I think my own experiences as that young teenager of recognizing the impact on my own mental health and well-being, I then went on and studied psychology with sports science. And that was, I think it was one of the first courses that was really looking at sports psychology. It's now a huge topic, but that was the early days of really kind of starting to, nowadays a lot of people have a sports psychologist even as an expert in their field. It was quite rare back, I think I started uni in 2000. So my early experiences with running really influenced the direction I took in life, yeah.
Yeah, sports psychology is quite an interesting one, isn't it? Because I remember not so long ago, it was almost thought of, for want of a better term, as something that was maybe a little bit woo. You know, it was particularly in, I used to watch a lot of football, and when sports psychologists used to come in football, people would be like, that's a bit odd. What are they doing that for? But now it's really common, and you look at some of the work that someone like Gareth Southgate does with the England football team, and it's massive. I guess you've noticed that change throughout your career as a runner and with that sports psychology.
Yeah, and you know, I think often that can be, I mean, biomechanics, equipment, all of these things, we can be pretty much even with someone else, but what we can do in our mind and what we can, the processes we can put in for our place can make all the difference between achieving, winning, overcoming losses, like how we deal with kind of failure, how we kind of self-talk, all of these things. It's I think this is probably why it's become so popular, because people are looking for those small gains now that it's across all sports. You know, the level is just increasing, so the kind of small gains, if they thought sports psychology was a bit woo before, they're kind of thinking, well, let's give it a shot, because if it helps us with kind of 1%, 2% gain, that could be the difference between winning and ultimately losing, couldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And is it something you've been able to apply? You know the theory, but have you been able to apply it practically to your own running, or is that harder?
I think I have. I think I probably suffer from one of those, the more you know, the more you realize you don't know, if that makes sense. And I think in my early days of running quite competitively, I applied it a lot. And the last maybe 8 years, I've been on quite a big learning and information splurge. And I feel almost like I know less, because I'm so aware of just how much information there is. So I do apply it to myself. I'll use mantras, I'll use thought stopping. I try to empower myself when I'm running and struggling. And I try to kind of really look on, I suppose I take my brain on and the negative thoughts and the kind of the voices of you can't do this, you can't achieve, or all those, you're hurting, so just stop, especially for my long distance stuff. So I kind of, it's like I have a devil and an angel on either shoulder and this kind of conversation going on. So to get control of them, then I will kind of sit back and use a bit of sports psychology techniques.
I know this is probably an impossible question to do in a half an hour, 40-minute podcast when we've got so much other stuff to go through, but are there very quickly just a couple of top tips, or even one top tip, that you could give to somebody who's looking to get that extra 1%, whether that's to get themselves around part run or do their first ultra or whatever?
I think it's notice the negative thoughts straight away. So you might be, no matter what distance you're doing, you could be 4K and a 5K and you're hurting and your brain starts to think, I can't, this is too hard. So it's going down all these, all the negative, this is too hard. And so it's changing that to, yes, it's hard, but I've done it before and I can do it again. Yes, it's hard, but you're running strong, you've trained hard. So you're not totally removing the fact that it's hard. You're not telling yourself it's easy, because it's not, but you're acknowledging the kind of, it's hard, your legs hurt, but you're also then reassuring yourself. You're almost speaking to yourself as you would a friend. So you're not beating yourself up. You're kind of hearing the negative thoughts saying, yeah, I understand it's hard, but you've got the energy. You had a good breakfast. You've trained hard. You don't have injuries. You can do this. So you're having that dialogue in your head. That really helps.
And I guess that's why it is so vital to actually do the training and have the nutrition and so on, because those mantras mean nothing if you've not done the work.
True, completely. I would agree with that. If you've got everything else in the bag, then you've got the confidence to say you've done the training. Whereas if you haven't done the training, then I suppose, you know, and you're thinking it's hard, you're kind of like, well, you've not really done the training, so it's going to feel hard. So you can maybe just laugh at yourself for that one then.
Well, going back to the timeline, which I've veered off of slightly, I think the next thing that you got into was adventure racing. I mean, first of all, what does that mean? What do you mean by adventure racing?
I guess adventure racing, I couldn't tell you what the actual definition would be, but for me, I consider it kind of more off-road, often involves some form of water, aquatic, whether it's kayaking or swimming, mountain bikes, navigation, running, quite often climbing. So all sorts of different disciplines, and you're going on a route. You're basically doing a route that isn't marked. You're using a map and a compass, and you're trying to find certain points like you would in orienteering, but you're doing it all under your own steam of running, biking, kayaking, swimming, climbing. I'm sure some adventure races would have things like sailing or, so it's all different kind of ways of traveling, I suppose. And quite often it would be done in teams. So I got into that.
And would that be across it sounds like the sort of thing might happen across quite epic landscapes.
Yeah, I did. It would be. I think I didn't do that many. I maybe did five or six. One of the most gorgeous ones I did was up. Well, I live in Ireland just now, but it was over in Galway in Ireland. And it was absolutely stunning. It was kind of really remote, really isolated. And, you know, if you got lost, you could not ask anyone. There was, you know, you were quite isolated. But some of the big races there'd be races all over the world and really, I mean, they'd be pricey, but they'd be in just really incredible places, I'm sure. So I haven't done any of those, I'm afraid.
Well, it sounds absolutely epic. And as somebody who had a very minor meltdown at the weekend over suddenly being told that on a 10K trail run that I might have to use GPX files and having no idea what I was doing, I think they both sound amazing and quite terrifying. But well done you.
I think you hit the nail on the head, amazing and terrifying.
And after that, it was on to ultras.
Yeah, I think with the adventure racing, I found I just didn't have the time to invest in all the different disciplines. And it was quite exhausting balancing life and all the different disciplines and training. And so I just returned to my number one love, which was running. And for me, I then thought, well, I'm really good at endurance. I enjoy endurance. I like it being a day out kind of thing. So I kind of committed to the long, long distance, really. And technically an ultra is anything over a marathon. So technically 27 miles would be an ultra. So normally an ultra would be 30 miles plus. And that's, I think that's where I then really found my love and started to kind of make myself at home that's where I feel most at home with my running.
And when you're talking, using the word ultra, what distance are you talking about for the races that you've done?
So compared to a lot of my friends, I've not done that many ultras, if I'm honest. I've probably only done between 10 and 15. My favorite distance for ultras would be about 50 odd miles. I've done quite a few less than that, kind of 30, 40 miles, but I really like a 50 miler. The kind of one of the biggest kudos races would be a 100 mile race. I've still not done 100 miles. I've got quite a fragile body, shall we say, and I'm not sure if my body will carry me there, but I do have a few longer races on the horizon. So I like the 50 mile. And the reason I like that is I feel you can still push yourself if you train properly and you train hard. You're running all of it, unless it's hilly sections. Whereas I think sometimes a 100 miler, there can be a lot of fast hiking in it. So I try to be as nippy as I can be, shall we say. So, but I still feel like I've not quite cut my teeth in the ultra world because I've not got the 100 under my belt. But I know that's an attitude thing, and it's something I need to get over.
Yeah, it's always interesting to hear what sort of different people think different levels are, really. Almost the, oh, I've only done 10 or 15 ultras. I couldn't imagine people listen to this go, what do you mean only? That's a lot of ultras.
Yeah, and you know, I think my danger here is that I know some phenomenal ultra runners, like run for their country, run, yeah, and just record breakers. And so I suppose I'm putting myself in their shadow, but yeah, I suppose everything in perspective.
Now, I really want to talk to you about this bit because this sounds really fun. Something else you've gone on and done is canny sports and working with dogs, and that just sounds really exciting. How did you get into that?
Oh, that yeah, this is my big love. So I am massive dog fan, massive. So when you combine a love for dogs, a love for running, a love for trails and the outdoors, and when I first got my now late dog Jasper, I specifically got Avila so she could come on the trails with me and she could be a running companion. And I did my research and I learned that they were great endurance dogs. So I saw her as my training buddy for ultras, and we just had a great time. But once I got her, I met a lot of people who had dogs that they ran with. And at this time in Scotland, there was Canicross was kind of on, it was still quite grassroots, but there was a lot of people doing it and there was a few little groups. And several folk encouraged me. I'm quite an organizer, shall we say. And so several folk encouraged me and a friend to start a group in Edinburgh, which we called Canny Sports Edinburgh. So we initially started now 11 years ago. We started off doing, I think it was three, it started to one run a week, then it very quickly increased to two, then three. So people would come along with their dogs, would do a 5K route of trail running, all different levels, and we'd have a bit of a social afterwards. So it combined, it was a good social opportunity. It combined the love of dogs, the outdoors, running. And it was really inclusive. It was super, super inclusive and friendly. And I think from there, we kind of did a lot of fundraising. We bought a lot of equipment so that we could help people. So they didn't have to buy equipment. First of all, we could lend gear because there's a fair amount of equipment involved as well for the dog safety. Do you want me to explain how Canny Cross works?
Yeah, I think that might be good for people.
I was just thinking that, yeah. So the running with your dog attached to them is called Canny Cross. And you are, so the dog wears a harness and it's a special harness that kind of goes over the shoulders and doesn't restrict their forward movement. And it's they pull from the chest as opposed to the throat. So the windpipe and the shoulders are not restricted. And there's all sorts of different harnesses. So the dog wears a harness and then the human wears a belt, quite similar to a climbing belt, but it would be lighter. And then you are connected. The human and the dog are connected by a line that has a bit of bungee in it. So if there's any jolting, it's not going to jar you. And the dog is taught to run up in front of you and give you a little bit of a pull. And then you give the dog commands that they can learn over time as you would train any dog. So you can give them commands for right and left. You can give them commands to slow down, to speed up. And really, as long as certain health requirements are met, any dog can do it. I mean, the most important thing is that the dog has fun and that the person has fun and you're doing this together. The dogs aren't forced to do this, but it's a really safe way to exercise your dog as well. If you're in a kind of, if you can imagine a group of 30, 40 people all with dogs off lead running crazy, whereas in Canny Cross, all dogs are under control because they're all online, and they pick it up really quick. So we had an amazing time doing it. I say we had because the club is still going on and it's become huge in Scotland, but I personally am not involved in it anymore. But it's an absolutely brilliant way to get your run in and exercise your dog at the same time.
And does it make you faster? The dogs force you along quicker because they are
It,
fast.
oh, you would absolutely. So, okay. So obviously if you were running with a Yorkie, it's not going to make you faster. My German pointer, he's 12 years old and he's absolutely retired. He just likes a walk now. But in his heyday, I'd say he took my 5K would be just over 20 minutes, and he brought me to just over 16 minutes for a 5K.
Wow.
So yeah, you're looking at now that's not necessarily standard. Some will have a bigger increase in pace, some will have a smaller increase in pace. But it depends on the route. It depends on the dog. I was having 30 kg of German Pointer running with a big smile on his face and really wanting to pull. And you're running on just, there's a few kind of, I suppose, things to consider. You're running on trail, so you'd be running on soft surfaces. So it wouldn't be something you're doing on tarmac, just for the dog's joints and their paws and their own comfort.
Yeah.
So if you're running on like kind of sandy trails or something, and you're going around a corner and you're getting towed by your dog, it can be like you're almost wakeboarding behind them. So the pull that you're getting, you're kind of, it's like running with the most phenomenal tailwind. It's great. So yeah, there would be a few health implications, because if any of your listeners were really keen to do it, equipment would be a biggie, just for the comfort of your dog and your own comfort. Dogs should really be a year before we run with them, just to make sure their bones and joints are developed. Bigger breed dogs, you're looking at a year and a half. So just to make sure there's later in life kind of arthritis, things like that. Terrain, which I've already covered. I suppose weather conditions is really important. So Canicross would be a winter sport. Dogs overheat really, really quickly. So there was a rule of thumb, and I'm trying to remember what it was. So if it was a really, really good equation, it's temperature times humidity. And if that's over 1,000, then the rule of thumb is don't run with your dog in Canicross. So for instance, if it was 16 Celsius and then humidity was at 70. So the general rule of thumb, listen, this might have been superseded now, but it's a really good gauge, because humidity can be a big one for a dog as well. So general rule of thumb is it's kind of sick. It's anything over 1,000 for the equation of temperature Celsius times humidity, you wouldn't be running. And then just lots of stops along the way to give them a drink, but be careful. This is a tricky one as well. You don't want your dog to take on too much water during a run, because that can cause tummy issues. Worst case scenario, it could lead to bloat. So there's lots and lots of different bits of advice and information. It's not quite as simple as just going off and running with your dog. But I think one of the great things now is it's everywhere. If anyone was interested in doing it, I guarantee there'd be a group or a club within driving distance from them that they could go along to. They could borrow equipment and they could learn kind of a few ins and outs of how to get started.
Yeah, it definitely sounds really cool. And I think there are ones around here near Northampton, because I've heard of other people who've done it. One thing I was interested in as well was you said that you had yearly races with the Canicross as well, which sounds pretty epic.
Yeah, so well, these were the ones I organized. In reality, in the actual season, and when I say the season, and that's really the winter, you could find a race every weekend in the UK. So I myself and my friend who set up Canny Sports Edinburgh, we set up a annual race at Fox Lake in East Lothian, which was a brilliant, brilliant venue. And so you'd have a 5K route, we'd have a short route, which was, I think the short route was maybe 2.5 kilometers, and we'd have fun runs for the kids. So there'd be adult races and kid races. You wouldn't be, I think a lot of people listening might kind of think, well, you're kind of handicapped but depending on your breed of dog. And you are. You're not put in categories depending on the dog. So it's really your choice. Some people who have really gotten into the sport or the discipline have maybe started off with collies or started off with a certain breed of dog and then ended up with faster, fitter, stronger dogs because they've really become quite committed to Canicross as I suppose as their spot of choice. But it's, for me, it was always, I was at the sharp end, but it was something I really enjoyed and I loved doing. So it was for me finding the balance between it. And it's, for some people, they're super competitive. For some people, it's just about having fun and a day out for the dogs. So I think it can suit everyone's needs, really.
And this sort of idea of having fun while running and enjoying it, which you seem to embrace, I think that's something which has also translated into a running tour company that you did for a while called Run the Sights. That sounds pretty cool. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I love doing that. So probably about 7 years ago now, when I was living in Edinburgh, because I love running so much, and when I go traveling, I always go for a run to take in the sights. I thought, wouldn't it be great instead of walking tours to do running tours? So I hit Google and I discovered that this wasn't a new idea. So I wasn't recreating the wheel. So I set up run the sites in Edinburgh and expanded it to Dundee and Glasgow. And so we did running tours around the sites. We'd stop off at places, and I would give a little bit of information as to what we were looking at, a bit of history, some quirky facts, and then we'd carry on running. So it was really a really fun way of, I suppose, for seeing the sites, learning about information. And I was fascinated by, it wasn't just the tourists that I would hear from and I'd have tours organised by. It would be a lot of locals. It would be conference groups. I think the locals were particularly taken with my, I did a Prosecco running tour. So I think they particularly liked that. Yeah. So, and just really, we had kind of Hindus and birthdays, just a really fun kind of day out. And a lot of people who were local, for instance, in Edinburgh, I'd take them places, half of the places we went to, they would comment about how they never knew that existed, or they'd never noticed it, or they never knew the information about it. So it was nice to kind of deepen people's connection with their home city.
Yeah, I think that they seem to be coming in increasingly popular, this idea of running tours. And I think it's an incredibly unique way of being able to see a different city, and also see it quite a lot quicker than you would if you were doing a walking tour. I mean, I suppose if you're on a bus, that might happen quicker, but you're not seeing half of it when you're doing that.
Yeah, I have this thing that unless you sweat somewhere, you've not really connected with it. So walking tour, you're not quite sweating. Running tour, bike tours, kayaking tours, all of these things, hiking, you're sweating in your environment, so you're connecting with it. And I think the great thing with, I'd quite often have maybe, I don't know, maybe a partner would come on the tour because their partner didn't run, or so they'd come on the tour, they'd see places they maybe wanted to see again. And so that would be, they'd then go back, get their partner, and off they'd go to the one or two highlights that they'd discovered on the running tour. So it was a really good way to kind of get a quick whistle stop shot. What's out there? Right. This is what I want to go back and explore. So it actually benefited the family of those who didn't come on the running tour, because yeah, it would then pave the way for them to plan how they wanted to spend their time in Edinburgh.
Is it something that you've taken into your tourism when you go away somewhere? Is it the first thing you do is let's set your trainers and head out and run? I was speaking to someone on the podcast not so long ago who said exactly that.
100%. Always, always. I mean, I'd be running anyway. I train a lot, but I love to kind of just go off and explore, kind of go around all the different streets, see if there's any, I'll always see if there's an actual running tour, or if there's some kind of group of sorts that I can join and speak to some locals. So absolutely, it's a big part of my kind of adventures.
Just talking about your running more generally and the reasons why you're running these days. We've obviously spoken about how you started running and that it was partly as an escape at boarding school and so on. My understanding is that running is still a big thing for you now in terms of mental health and keeping yourself on that even keel.
Yeah, I think like many people, I think it really helps me with the structure. It gives me, I do freelance work now, and it really helps me kind of structure my day. It's kind of the skeleton of my week or my month. And when my running falls to pop, the skeleton kind of, everything goes a bit wobbly. And my mind as well. I think anyone who's been running for so long, they recognize that it becomes a stress reliever. It helps alleviate anxiety. A lot of us don't even realize that we can be susceptible to some mental health kind of adverse symptoms, I suppose, because we run for so long, and it's only when we stop that we kind of think, whoa, hang on a second. This is, yeah, so we don't even realize it. So for me, I think running just keeps me feeling as normal as I possibly can. And it's the only time I really feel like myself and like I'm free and valid and that I'm relevant, if that makes sense.
And is it running on your own? Is it running with groups, or a bit of both?
I think a bit of both. I do most of my running by myself, not necessarily through choice, just life circumstances at the moment. But I also love, I've got some great friends who I do some adventures with, and it's amazing when you've got a good friend that you can go off, you're running, you barely even notice you're moving because you're just chatting and laughing and you're in the moment and creating new memories. And by the time you get to the end, you've got 10, 20 miles up a hill in the bag, but you barely focus on it because you're just remembering the giggles you've had. So that's magical. So yeah, I think a combination is really helpful.
Yeah, and I read a blog that you did. I'm not actually sure how old it was, so I hope it's not really old and it was years ago. And you were like, I don't remember that. But you were basically talking about sort of connections that we make as runners. And I thought there was a really bit in an interesting bit in there where you were talking about normally connections are made over eye contact and stuff like that. But actually, that can be awkward at times. But when you're running and you're having to look where you're going, that actually those conversations can be more natural than they might otherwise be.
Yeah, you've kind of hit the nail on the head of one of my little theories, and I'm sure there'd be science to it. I kind of have this idea that I think anyone who's a runner, I think has gone for a run, maybe with a group, and there might be someone there that they barely know, yet they tell them something they've not told one of their good friends, or they exchange information. And I just have this theory that you're running side by side, you're not looking at each other. There's no eye contact, which can sometimes be quite intimidating. And you just feel safe. You've got the endorphins of the run. You feel safe. You're maybe because the other person you're talking to is breathing out their arse, so it sounds like they're listening intently to you. I don't know. But I've experienced it with people telling me things or me telling other people things. I feel it's a real bonder. And you could end up, I think, like I said in that blog, you can start a run as strangers and finish it as new best friends. And it can be really bonding.
Do you think that increases as well with distance or perhaps the hardness of the run? Because I've heard from other ultra runners in particular that they get there's a point in some ultra runs and no one's quite been able to put an actual mileage on it exactly where suddenly you would tell anyone anything.
Yeah, I think so. I think you get to the point in some ultra runs where I guess it's almost like not decency goes out the window, but you don't get, like, if you've got to go for a pee or you've got to suddenly change your top, you're not kind of looking to hide as such. You're kind of like, all that matters is that you're running and the time and you're racing, and people just don't care. Like, from toilet humor to, you recognize you're all human. Everyone goes through similar things. Everyone has to, I don't know quite what vulgar things I should or shouldn't say on your podcast, but you're all human. And I think the airs and graces go out the window a little bit. Yeah, it's a real leveler. It's a real leveler.
Yeah, I'm not sure we have too many boundaries on Running Tales, but...
Okay.
One thing I just want to finish off with is that evergreen question of what's next for you? What is on the running horizons?
I've actually just figured out my race calendar for this year. So because I'm based in Ireland at the moment, I did a Ballyhoura marathon. I did that a few years ago. I want to do that again. A 34K race called the Galtee Crossing, which is up my kind of local hills, which is beautiful. And then my main race is the Wicklow Way, which is 127 kilometers. That's in October. So that will actually be the longest I've ever done I think the longest I've done so far is 55 miles. So the Wicklow Way will be my longest to date. So I've got plenty of time to train for it, plenty of time to just get a plan in place and just commit. So hopefully I will make it in one piece.
And some ultra training as well, because I think you're involved in coaching too these days.
Yeah, no, I'm really, really lucky. I coach with Pylon Ultra, with Paul Giblins, the chief of that. He's a very, very heavily decorated ultra runner. He's done pretty much all the hardest races around the world, run for Great Britain, done Barclay Marathon, Western States, West Highland Way. He's got some amazing achievements. So I went on board with Pylon Ultra about a year and a half ago now. So it's really satisfying helping other ultra runners, I suppose, all different abilities, but helping them kind of achieve their dreams and realize what they're capable of. And yeah, and hopefully help them get personal best times and things like that, and just get to the end of the race in one piece and raring to go again.
Oh, fantastic. Well, I wish you all the best of luck with helping other people and with your own runs and getting out there and running with all the dogs. So thank you so much for coming and joining us on Running Tales today.
Thank you. And yeah, it's all about the dogs.
Thanks again to Ali for joining us on the Running Tales podcast. I hope you enjoyed her story, wide-ranging as it was, as much as I did. Now, just before we go, I want to take a moment to ask all of you, our wonderful listeners, to take a bit of time out to give us a review and a rating wherever you listen to Running Tales. Positive reviews mean the podcast gets seen by a wider audience. So the more we get, then the more people get to listen to the inspiring stories of people like Ali. Also, if you want to see and hear more of our content, please be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram, where we can be found at Running Tales Pod, on Facebook, where our page is simply called Running Tales, or check out our YouTube channel, which is also at Running Tales Pod. You can also subscribe to our newsletter by visiting runningtales.substack.com, where you can find written versions of all of these podcasts, as well as articles on a range of subjects from the world of running and all of our regular updates. Thank you so much as ever for all of your support, and I look forward to seeing you again on next week's Running Tales podcast.